Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rastan, today we have returning champion. He's now a writer, he always was, arts patron, Edin Koo.
I've just been insulted. Always been a writer.
I know.
Yeah, no. No, but I'm thinking about, which we will get onto in a moment, is the book that you've just released about your father.
Thank you. Good to be here, yes. As always.
Great, thank you. Phew, trouble straight away. And we have the return of, for the first time for quite a while, once upon a time BFM's very own, Lee Tree Lin.
Hello.
Now working somewhere else.
Now working not that far somewhere else, but somewhere else indeed, yeah.
Right, because producer Ali was saying to me, well, we should get Lin back. And I was saying, who the hell is she? I don't remember.
You know, I remember. I heard of that, and it took me a while to get over the hurt. But, you know, I guess here I am, easily persuaded.
But it's great to have you back. At some point, I'll remember who you are.
Yeah.
So
work on it.
And our three topics this week will be Fearless Girl versus Charging Bull. Topic number two is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And finally, topic number three will be autobiographies. So, Lin, who is the Fearless Girl and what is the Charging Bull?
Thank you for remembering my name, Cam. Well, so Charging Bull was, it's the famous Wall Street sculpture, I suppose, of a large bronze bull that was installed in 1987 after the Wall Street crash by Arturo de Modica. Nobody asked for it. He just kind of went, made it, dumped it in the middle of Wall Street. And since then, it's become the fixture that it's been. It's got all the proper licensing and all the stuff that it needs to stay there. And recently, in conjunction with International Women's Day, State Street Bank. So nobody knew who did this at first, but it turned out it was State Street Bank via an advertising firm. They commissioned another sculpture called Fearless Girl, and it's a little girl wearing high top sneakers, hands on hips, kind of staring down the bull. In the same way, it was installed overnight. Nobody knew it was going to be there, then it was. Also in the same way, it's kind of become a sensation. People are flocking to it to take photos. There's been a strong reaction. Now people want it to stay. Except for the artist of Charging Bull, Arturo de Modica, who is now saying that it violates his copyright. I just kind of wanted to toss this in the middle of the room and let it simmer a bit, because I have a lot of feelings about it. On the one hand, Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, for example, he said, you know, there's no room for men who have no room for women in New York, something to that effect. But other people are saying, well, yes, I mean, her being there does fundamentally change the nature of Charging Bull, which was supposed to be optimism and, you know, economic strength. And now it's become a symbol of misogyny and all that junk. So, yeah.
Edin?
Junk is what it is. I'm totally with David Lynch on this, who made a statement that a lot of public art is becoming a real nuisance. Now, there are a couple of things here. First of all, De Modica was, I think, very correct when he identified this to be nothing more than an advertising trick.
It does feel that way, doesn't it?
It certainly feels that way. And I think it really reflects the kind of smugness that many Oprah liberals feel that they have the right to impose upon, you know, what they read in something else. This is what is amazing to me. They read something into that bull. The bull is beautiful, by the way. Maybe I'm being very Hindu about this, but there's something about the image that is so finely crafted in cast bronze. It's just a beautiful piece of work. And this Fearless Girl, for all that she stands, is just very common. It's a horrible work of art.
I don't know. I think that both pieces of art are incredibly literal, and you know, they make sense instantly, and there's not much. It's not like a Henry Moore sculpture, which is just a big blob and you have to work out what the hell's going on. But I would say, you know, the Charging Bull only makes sense in that one particular street in the whole of America. It wouldn't make sense anywhere else. It would, otherwise, it could be a commentary on some Hinduism thing. It has to be in the economic center of America to make sense. But the girl, she could make sense in other locations. You could have her stand outside Trump Tower.
So I find it interesting that you use the word makes sense, because the whole point that I found interesting about this is that public art is public art, which means that once you release it to a certain degree, it's going to be what people make of it. I mean, that's true of most art, but truest still of street art, where it interacts with people on a very, you know, daily friction sort of basis. People pass the bowl every day. Now people pass the girl every day. There is something to be said about the fact that, for example, during the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations, the bowl became a symbol of all that was wrong. The bowl became a symbol of capitalism. The bowl became a symbol of the 1%. So it's not the first time that the bowl's meaning has changed. And if the artist wants to claim a copyright, I mean, there is that. And also, Fearless Girl, regardless of what you think of, you know, how she looks or her value as a piece of art, has value to a lot of people as a symbol of female strength. And I suppose that symbol carries through even if you don't necessarily know who commissioned it.
Yeah. Yeah. But Edin, you still...
No, there are lots of symbols of female strength. What I'm saying is...
Oh, we've got enough. The quote has been filled.
No, not saying that. But, you know, you're imposing something upon something else. And I think the artist perfectly has a right, you know, to feel quite violated. I mean, and why does the bull suddenly represent everything that the fearless girl apparently opposes?
Right.
The bull represents strength, tenacity.
Well, it just represents a bull market. I mean, come on. That's all it is. It's just a bull market. It's like an economic term. Bull market, the end. There's nothing else to say about it.
First of all, you know, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with that term.
Precisely. So the sculptor, when he dumped it there, I actually thought he was sponsored it. I didn't until you said, Lynn. He put it there. He is self-promotion by doing that. He takes his chances. He puts a sculptor there. Somebody is free to come along and do whatever they want.
Because essentially what it is a gift to the city of New York. That's how he thought of it.
Great advertisement for his own skill as a sculptor.
Yeah, well, I also have an aesthetic argument here.
Go on then.
No, it is. Public murals used to be public murals. They were really well done, you know. There was a huge element of aesthetics to it. Today it's all about making a statement, and that's about it. You know, and very often, a lot of public art is very, very ugly.
Can I jump very quickly then? Jump to Malaysia, Penang, where, for instance, you have...
Yeah, that's a nuisance too, actually.
Okay. A very, very incredibly popular piece of public art. For instance, the children on the bicycle. And I've walked past there many times, and there are tourists and just queuing up to have their photograph taken with that. Isn't that a nice thing?
You know, there's more art in the cracking paint that preceded that horrible mural. You know, they call it a mural.
Yeah.
Diego Rivera is mural la. This is just, you know, nuisance art. Maybe.
There's also something to be said about, I mean, we talk about aesthetics, but I suppose when you look at the bowl and the girl, for example, you have all these discussions about meaning. That was the immediate reaction. I don't think the aesthetics even entered the picture till a little later. At the very beginning, it was, what does this mean? Who is she? What does she mean? Whereas if you look at the kind of public art we have, broadly speaking here, it's really kind of, is this Instagram friendly? Can I hashtag that I was here? And that's kind of where it sits and where it ends.
Right.
Whereas, yeah, I think the bowl has kind of, I mean, it's now 30 years old this year.
Mm.
It's kind of stood and been that popular, partly because of where it sits. I agree with you. I don't think only.
Well, where else can it be and have any meaning?
It's a lovely work of art. You dump it in Lake Gardens, it will still look good.
And you'd be saying, why the hell is there a bull here?
I think you're dismissing the significance of... That's like saying, I think the same thing that you said earlier about the girl and her pose and how she's relevant in many places. I think that's true of the bull too. You're dismissing the symbolism of a bull itself. A bull in most places always will represent strength to some degree. I don't think it's just a bull market, even though I agree that it's a literal representation. But if you took it out and dumped it in the middle of Bandar Utama, people would be like, wow, Bandar Utama's bullish.
There's a bull.
Strong.
I think it's fake symbolism. I mean, you know what would really happen if a little girl faced a bull.
Yeah, no,
we
absolutely.
We all know what would happen.
Yes. Absolutely.
Evisceration.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. It was my thought entirely. Get out of the way. But anyway, okay, well, I'm ultimately unimpressed, really. They're not terribly interesting.
I'm interested in the way meanings change. So I don't have a huge problem with it. I didn't expect to feel so much sympathy for Demotica. I must admit that when I first read it, my knee-jerk reaction was, what's wrong with you? But after considering it, I did think, no, you know, that initial surge of feeling was just because you feel like as a feminist, I need to have emotions about this. When you think about it,
you know, but there's also such an commercial element to it that that is what I find really vulgar. You know, that all the statements we need to make seem to have a very strong commercial dimension to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we must move on. We overstayed our welcome, though, I think, with the bull and the girl. But we're going to be quite short with topic number two, which is the 7 habits of highly effective people. Actually, the topic's not about that. I just use that as a kind of radio form of clickbait to draw you in. I have to say that whenever I see these kinds of things, for instance, just the other day I was reading Oprah Winfrey, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett share the same habit, the 5-hour rule. So I couldn't help it. I had to know. I read it, and it just turned out basically that they read a book before they go to bed. And it doesn't say, for instance, they might all three of them sit down while peeing. We don't know. But that is another habit which perhaps they share in common. But I'm wondering, how come I don't know if you two guys share the same thing. I can't help but want to know. Do I, or can I learn from, the habits of these highly successful people? Are you drawn to this kind of thing?
It's a fetish. I do it too, actually.
Oh.
I do it too. I love reading that stuff. It makes no impact on me, and I keep saving it all the time. I keep saving it on my Facebook Messenger, and I've got just loads of this.
Really?
Yeah, just reams of this stuff.
Because you want to learn, you want to take part, or is it like,
I
do that too.
I'm incredibly cynical, yet at the same time, you know, really quite innocent and curious as I approach these things.
There might be a voyeuristic element to it to some degree. You want to peek into someone else's life and see how it goes. You know, what do you do that's different from me? You know, how do you shower? I think that's the element. I confess I don't read these, mostly because I think they're kind of widely communicated notions. You know, things like have a uniform, you know, read before bed, all these different things. And some of them literally don't jive, I guess, with how I like to live my life. So I dismiss it and I've just stopped reading.
You know, a very strange thing is this, because I save all this stuff, but I don't read it. But when I eventually do, there's nothing extraordinary. And I keep doing all the same things, including pee when you sit down. Don't we all? But sit down and pee. Sorry, not pee when you sit down. nothing extraordinary seems to work for me.
And you're still,
I share lots of these habits with these people.
And you're highly successful, Edin. So therefore,
well, hardly.
Okay. I didn't want to say
Bill
that.
Bill Gates League.
No. Well, yeah. I feel disappointed whenever I do read them. It's like I do that too, and yet. Nothing changes.
I think it's almost like reading sort of a snippet of a self-help book. It makes you feel like you've done something for yourself. You've looked into someone else's life. You rub yourself a little bit on the sheen of their success and you go, ooh, and then, you know, that's kind of it.
And so it's a fetish.
Yeah. I think so.
Anyway, so has
so
anyone...
So you just confessed to a fetish on air, Cam.
Is it?
Yeah, I think
you
did.
Well, no, he's called it a fetish. Edin called it a fetish.
And I'm agreeing with things. Edin. So,
oh, so therefore...
You know, yeah.
They're healthy things, fetishes.
Okay. Has anyone seen Little Miss Sunshine?
Yeah.
So in the movie, there's a guy who's a very unsuccessful fella who's trying to peddle a book, which is like, I think it's like the 17 habits of highly effective people. And eventually his agent says, look, nobody's going to publish this book. One, because who the hell are you to tell people how to be successful? And two, 17. No one goes for 17. You've got to go for a small number. And it's a wonderful thing that a really unsuccessful person is trying to tell people how to be successful. So anyway, go check out Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, that's a very good film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I will continue with my fetish until such a time.
I will too. In fact, I just saved one today.
Oh, what was that one?
Oh, something about what you do after you get out of bed to be energetic.
And he can't remember. Okay, so in a moment, though, we will have topic number three, autobiographies, here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Lee Tree Lin, and Edin Koo. And now, topic number three, autobiographies, Ed and Koo.
Yeah, just before that, I had a great one the other day. Oh. It's how to eat an orange in a shower.
Oh, I read about that.
Which I'm going to start practicing next week.
Let us know how that goes. I thought about it, but yeah. I haven't
It's about how you re-energize the primordial in you. I think I've been doing that all my life, but I'm going to give this orange thing a try.
It's like juices running down your arms.
I'll let you know what its effect has been.
Okay.
But I'm just on the heels of working with my father on his autobiography, which was a remarkable experience. You know, you think you know somebody all your life, and you know very little of them. The process of contextualizing that life becomes so multifaceted. It is sad, it is exciting, it is beautiful, it is excruciating, it is infuriating, it's frustrating, all at the same time. But, you know, what is very interesting is the approach to autobiography. I mean, I'm a huge fan of biographies, yes, especially because it gives you a sense of how unpredictable history is and how it is shaped by really eccentric, capricious individuals sometimes. But autobiography is another slant altogether, because there are two paths it can take. One is self-justification, a lot of defensiveness and self-justification. And the other path, it can be very celebratory, I think.
Self-celebratory?
No, just celebratory about times, about people you know. And it was lovely to see my father take that route. You know, there was so little about politics. There was so much about a time in Malaya that just seemed to be so open and free. And there's so much space and pace in that book that I think, we today just don't recognize.
Can I just point out, this is a very clever piece of self-publicity, by the way. So just clear the air. What is the name of the book? You haven't actually said it yet.
Yeah, the name of the book is IKKK.
Right. And
the autobiography of a historian.
It has just come out, and you told me you're already into a second edition.
Yes.
And it came out like just 1 week ago.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
It just hit the bookshelves.
Lynn, have you written your autobiography yet?
Well, I mean, Cam, isn't this, in a way, an audio autobiography? But
I guess, yeah.
Well, no, but I like reading autobiographies. I enjoy autobiographies more than I enjoy biographies, honestly, because I prefer reading that sort of first-person perspective. But I did want to know, Eden, I mean, a couple of questions. How did you avoid romanticizing your dad, or did you lean into that and just kind of really go with it?
I don't think I romanticize him at all. Well, first of all, it's not my book, it's his.
Yeah.
He did it in collaboration with me, in the sense that, you know, when he first started to write it, it was very boring. It was, you know, such a historical treatise. We don't want that. And there are things I know about my father, of course. I'm very close to him. I'm the closest of the boys, and I've spent a lot of time with him. And the interior person is really quite different from the exterior person. You know, my father is known to be, you know, quite sober very kind of, you know, pragmatic and practical about things. But he has an incredibly black sense of humor, and he's very quirky.
We should just say, I mean, everyone should know this by now.
Oh, yes.
We're talking about Professor Kukkekin, the historian.
The historian.
Yeah.
Important, yes.
Yeah.
Important.
Yes. You know, that has never been revealed to people outside. Also, things like family. You know, I grew up in two very different, contrasting families. My father's is very silent and very remote to each other. You know, they could sit in a room for 3 hours and not actually say anything at all. My mother's family is very gregarious, very melodramatic. And there were just things I wanted to know.
Mm. There's Chinese and Indian as well.
Yeah.
I'm really neither interested in autobiography or biography. I don't find
you're a historian.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I had you figured as someone who'd like it.
No, actually. because it's like when you read autobiography, my instinct is lies, 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 because you're just covering up something. There are a handful that I've actually enjoyed, and for instance, Keith Richards' book Life,
because it's very good,
which is
extremely good.
Yeah,
which is very good, because he's the kind of guy who's going to go and just tell you. Yeah. He'll tell you stuff. He's not going to hide anything.
Andre Agassi's Open was extremely good. Yeah. If you haven't read that, that was excellent.
Okay, I'm not really into tennis, but anyway,
you don't have to be.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I like that kind of thing. And then also biography, though, it's interesting. You know, when you go to I love history. So I look at the history books, and you go to the Russian section, and it's all, you know, the Revolution, and it's the Great Terror and stuff. You go to the American section, and it's all biographies.
Mm.
There are very few books on historical moments, but it's all about individual people. So Americans are very interested in the individual, and I'm not so much. I want to know more about the context and the time.
Yeah, but you know, the individual is, you know, and you said lies. Yeah, you get that too. But and that is also very exciting, how people actually lie, how they devise their lies and what they believe about their lies. There are others that are very exploratory. I mean, I'm translating Malcolm X's autobiography
into Malay.
Oh, well, yeah, no. Which is a beautiful piece of work, I think. It's just because it's a man searching himself.
But that was written with Alex Haley. Yeah.
So done pretty much in this context. Very interesting thing about autobiographies also is about how public perception of what to expect from what a man wants to tell about himself. I'll give you an example. Years ago, Samad Ismail, the very well-known Malaysian journalist, who was also very, very politically active during a particular time. You know, he was known, you know, there are all these myths surrounding him. He was a gun runner for the Indonesian Revolution. He was, you know, a member of the PKM. You know, he eventually became one of the founding members of PAP before he crossed and, you know, to live here. He was expelled by Lee Kuan Yew. And he wrote a wonderful memoir called My Memoirs of Singapore. And everybody was expecting this to be a revelatory moment about him coming out, confessing about his political activities. When the book came out, it was so disappointing to most people because, you know, he was also a bon vivant and he lived a wonderfully exuberant life. And he talked about his early years in journalism, what kampung life was like. He talked about joget bars. He talked about the great world cabaret. Talked about getting gonorrhea. You know, wonderful, wonderful, rich book. But everyone was disappointed.
I see, that sounds good. I like that.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah, yeah. You know, I gave it a very good review in the Star, but most other people were almost angry that the book took that line.
That was making me think of Bob Dylan's Chronicles. Mm. Because similarly, if you were to read a biography of Bob Dylan, you have, you know, just the blow-by-blow. He was here, he came to New York, he idolized Woody Guthrie, etc., etc. But what you get with Chronicles is sort of a man in sketch. You know, he's sort of revealing himself through these anecdotes, these slender little moments in his life, and it spreads out. And it's beautiful. You get a view of a man, but it's not the same as lies.
Yeah, and sometimes we just don't want to allow the person to be themselves, right?
Yeah, and to reveal what they want to reveal about themselves, which is a person's prerogative. I like reading autobiographies also because I think it makes me more empathetic. Because you read about someone and you think, this is... Someday someone will be writing about their days that you are experiencing with them, possibly. Yes. And it's going to be viewed in this way. And I mean, sure, there's the whole rosy, hazy light of history, but it's great interior life. I think that's a great phrase.
If you believe that there's some honesty at play here, or if you already know a lot about the context of the times. If you don't already know, then you can't read into it. So, for instance, if, let's say, Mahathir Mohamad came out with his autobiography.
Which he did. It was very bad.
Which one were you talking about?
His memoirs.
That came out?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I was not interested, so I'd forgotten all about it. Because it would be very bad.
It was very badly done.
You wouldn't expect anything to come from that. Unless you know the times, then you can read stuff into it yourself, I would imagine.
Well, yes, but sometimes, you know, the personality speaks for themselves. I think every individual has a real eccentric dimension to them. And I've been doing a whole series of this. I did Ibrahim Hussein years ago. I'm working on Tun Saleh Abbas memoirs. And that's a fascinating thing because, you know, the man is so literary and you begin to discover what a person's strengths are. You know, like this old man who was a judge and everything. I mean, he has an incredible sense of color and landscape. So you have to allow in an autobiography, even if you don't know about the times, I think to allow that kind of beauty.
Is this going to be
view of the world.
This going to become your skill?
I just think lots of very particular to Asian culture, and my father is a good example. He's a very fine writer of historical material, you know, but he can't tell a tale in prose. He can tell a tale when he talks, you know, because we are still very much an oral. culture and oral tradition. Mm. And there are many people who are great storytellers and have a lot to tell, you know, and we need to put that down.
Right. Well, I will check out IKKK.
Thank you.
As will I.
Thank you.
Because, you know, your father's an important man, and I'm sure it'll be interesting. So, as a rule, though, I couldn't care less. But anyway, can either of you recommend then one that would break the mold that I might find interesting?
He doesn't like football. He doesn't like Leonard Cohen.
How dare you say that? I like football.
Andrea Perlo's book was excellent.
Okay.
Was very, very good. I mean, if football's your thing, if you're avoiding Mr. Agassi for tennis, have you read Bob Dylan's Chronicles?
I'm not really that interested in Bob Dylan.
So you are a very sad person.
He doesn't like Bob Dylan now? I mean,
I don't go out of my way for Bob Dylan. He's okay. It's like,
Andrea Perlow's book is excellent.
Okay.
Very
he's
funny.
Cool. And he's cool.
Yeah.
Actually, I really enjoyed Dennis Bergkamp's book. Because
Eric Cantona was very good too.
Yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
See?
Yeah, so patronizing. You give me little football things. You don't give me the big names. Oh, thank you. Anyway, so we move on now to recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And Lynn's going to go first.
Yeah, okay. So I have a twofold recommendation. The first is something I've been doing. The second is something I've signed up for because of what I've been doing. So I've been making a conscious effort to clean up my email newsletters because I have a problem. I've signed up for far too many. So what's been happening recently is I make a point of the minute a new newsletter comes in that I realize I never read, I unsubscribe right away. Yeah, and it's really been helping. I mean, it's been helping me save money because you're no longer thinking, ooh. It's been helping me kind of streamline my reading, my news sources. So that's been good. And in light of that, I would like to recommend a newsletter that I signed up for amidst the cull, which has made me really, really happy. And it is, in fact, the New York Times' cooking newsletter. It is spectacular. It makes you happy. It's like a thing to bolster your spirits every day to remind you about how you can make your life that little bit more enjoyable, you know. And beyond that, it's beautifully written. So it's like a letter to you. And it also contains recommendations for things to read, aside from just plain old recipes. So it's been quite a joy to receive in my inbox daily. I like it a lot.
And you've cooked any of these things?
Yeah, I love the cooking section on the New York Times. In general, that's a recommendation. But sign up for the newsletter. I think it will make you happy.
Eden, you gave a little thumbs up there. Are you aware of the New York
Times? Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah?
It's very, very good.
See?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's the New York Times cooking
newsletter.
Newsletter.
Yeah.
All right. Otherwise, it's the last. It's the only one that's made it onto the ark. Is it? The rest of them are going to have to
It's recently
drown.
Made it on the ark as I'm shoving other babies on the ship.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, my recommendation is 100 years ago, there was being fought the First World War between 1914 and 1918. And I'm fascinated by the First World War. I have distant family members who were involved in it, and some died, some lived. And I discovered this wonderful YouTube channel called The Great War. They are, I think it comes out of Germany. It's introduced by an American fellow who lives in Sweden, and he very knowledgeable. Little 8-minute videos on, they're charting in real time, as it were, week by week, the war. And they're also looking at individual moments, characters, and talking a lot about tactics and the interplay between tactics and economics. It's really great. I thought I knew the First World War, but each time I press one of these little videos, I learn something new. And it's also done in the way that I like, which is just a person telling you, as opposed to dramatic reconstructions and long shots of nothingness. He just sits there and he just tells you. So it's really good. It's called The Great War. They've got like 380 videos so far, and they're just increasing all the time. But I think it's great. Wonderful. So that's my recommendation. YouTube channel. Edin?
Well, you would think I would recommend my father's book.
Well,
which is very touching.
This whole
it's called IKKK, The Autobiography of a Historian. It's a very touching book. You'd think I'd recommend that, but I'm not actually. But go out and read it anyway. You'd also think that I would recommend a book on public art, real meaningful public art, like Diego Rivera's murals.
It's not actually public art. Can anybody walk into the building and see his art? Is that actually...
His art is mainly on walls
in
Mexico City.
But also the Rockefeller, or did they paint over?
Yeah, in the Rockefeller, he didn't complete it because they didn't like his portrayal of Lenin.
Right.
So he took it all down and returned the money. You see, a man of principle.
A great artist.
Yeah, and a very great artist. Right. So, but that's also, you know, I'm talking about it here, but not necessarily recommending it. My recommendation is, before you do anything at the start of the day, please go and eat an orange. In your bath and eat it savagely. Let all the citrus drip down your mouth, and you know, let's bring out the savage in you, because I think there's just way too little of that in our everyday life.
I will do that today.
Good idea.
Okay, that's one of the best recommendations ever. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains me now to thank special honored guest Lee Tree Lin, the return of.
Thank you.
And your face beginning to look slightly familiar to me. Your voice sounds, yeah.
Emerging from the mists.
Yeah. And Edin Koo.
Always good.
Good luck with that book. What was it called again?
IKKK, The Autobiography of a Historian. Very touching.
Right. Shameless. And myself, Cam Ruslan. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do so on our Facebook page. Every time you press like,
a fairy gets its wings.
A fairy gets its wings.
Yeah.
And also, all across the multimedia thingamajigs, Lee Tree Lin is a Snapchatty kind of person.
Instagrammy person, actually.
Isn't that the same thing? I didn't know. Edin's a Facebook kind of guy. Send Edin your favorite top five habits.
Oh, yeah, I'd save it.
Yeah, he'll love that.
Send photos of orange peel in showers.
No, that's not. That's not. I don't want to see it. And, well, great. So join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.